Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott.
And everything's coming up, Simpsons.
This episode is brought to you by the Timberlog Diner. Ooh. We're going to talk more about that in a little bit. And we're also brought to you by the Springfield Demolition Derby.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. We are, of course, here to talk about the episode Forgive and Regret. It is the 18th episode of the 29th season of The Simpsons. It was this episode that officially surpassed Gunsmoke to become the longest-running scripted primetime television series.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
That's so crazy.
I know.
It's crazy of The Simpsons, but it's also insane of Gunsmoke to have lasted so long.
Why? How dare Gunsmoke? Under the radar,
What do you think of the golden years of Gunsmoke?
Oh, I think about them all the time, so thanks so much for asking.
Of course.
I think that they are evergreen and always relevant.
Each better than the last.
Mm-hmm, like a fine wine. Anyway.
Each fine wine is better than the last fine wine.
Yes, I understand that phrase. This episode originally aired on April 29th of 2018, baby.
That's so cool.
I know. It was written by Bill Odenkirk, and the showrunner at the time and the showrunner now is Al Jean.
We love Al Jean. Hello, Al.
Hello, Al. It was also directed by Rob Oliver. I'm so excited to talk about this episode today.
Me too, and we found the perfect guest for it, but truly the only person who should talk about this episode.
Yeah. You know her from KCRW's Good Food. She is an author, chef, restaurateur, and radio host. Please welcome Evan Kleiman.
Hello, ladies.
Hello. We are super excited to talk about this episode with you because it obviously is very special to you. Normally, when we ask our guests to pick an episode, they don't have such a personal connection. So this is going to be really fun. Mm-hmm. I think we should get right into the episode choice and why you chose it. I bet a lot of people already know the connection because it is a pretty huge part of this episode. And it's very special and tender and great. And you are now part of Simpsons history. But can you walk us through your episode pick and why you're connected to it?
Well, first of all, let me just say I've always been so intrigued by the amount of food that's woven through Simpsons episodes.
Yeah.
And used in hilarious and strange ways to advance action and express emotion. So when I got an email asking me if I wanted to provide a pie recipe that would be like an Easter egg within an episode, I really thought I was being punked.
Who emailed you? It was Mr. Simpson at thesimpsons.com.
Yeah, exactly. And it was, you know, it was part of the staff. Yeah, and I was like, are you kidding? Is this for real? You have to, like, prove yourself to me that it's, like, an actual Simpsons thing. And then when they told me what the story was going to be and they sent me the pages, I mean, it was just like a dream because so much of the backstory of Homer is something we've all wanted to know more about and so emotional. And these images of Mona Simpson are so fleeting and rare.
Absolutely.
That to be able to contribute in any way to that was just fantastic and hilarious and wonderful.
You are part of the history of the most famous character of all time. It is so cool.
What, Homer Simpson or Mona?
Maybe Homer
in this
case. They're
baked one into each other.
They're baked into each other. Beautiful pun.
Ooh, hello.
So for those who don't know, this episode features a pie recipe. And as we touched on, it is something that Homer's mom, Mona, who you'll remember from an episode
Mother Simpson
mm-hmm. Back in the Bill Oakley, Josh Weinstein days. They have they show us that this is a huge part of Homer's life and could have even changed him so he wouldn't be who he is the way that we know him now. It's a very interesting thing because, as you said, it's such a touching, amazing use of this recipe. It could have very easily been like a pie contest. Like, it could have very easily been like they go to the fair and Marge decides to make a pie and they wanted to make a real one. I cannot imagine how that felt to see the emotional heaviness it would have. It's unbelievable.
for me, it's like so perfect because it's sort of what I've devoted my life to. This idea that like food is a prism that holds all these different parts of life, and a lot of them are difficult and hard to deal with and mark us and make us play out our own eating history in the future. And I mean, Homer's like the poster child of that now that we know the backstory. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's that one moment where he turns to his mom and he said, I love myself. And it's as he's stuffing his face filled with a piece of pie. It's just so adorable.
It is.
And the fact that she writes these notes to him on the back of the recipe cards because she must know she's going to leave.
Yeah.
It feels like she's like setting up a little recipe card / emotional index for him to access whenever he needs to.
I love that so much.
No, I'm going to cry.
I also want to specify, if you're driving and maybe some sounds made it hard to hear, she said food is a prism, not a prison.
Thank you
for clarifying.
Because for some of us, food is a prison.
Yes, I think for many of us, food is a prison.
Podcast is a prison, I'll tell you that.
That is a prism, it is.
Right as rain.
So, you know, I know that you talk so much, I'm sure, about things that are not just Simpsons related. So to ask you about how you got into your career might be boring. But if you wouldn't mind just telling us a little bit about how you got into this, we'd love to hear it.
Which part?
I guess whichever part you think is the most fun to tell, because there's so much that you could share. Some of our listeners might not know as much about things that aren't The Simpsons as other humans. So we try to culture them from time to time.
Okay. So I call myself, like on my business card, it says that I'm a culinary multitasker.
I love that.
I love it.
And I think it's because I've always like worn a lot of hats. But the through line of my life since childhood, much like Homer, has been food. And much like Homer, well, no, I think Homer's a pretty social guy. He's pretty comfortable in a group. But for me, I was not very comfortable sitting down and talking to people at the dinner table that I didn't know. So I learned very young that if you serve people and if you make food, you can participate in what goes on, but you get to be on the edges.
Yes.
And you can sort of just come in with the comments, kind of like Twitter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in the 50s.
The Twitter of the 50s.
Yeah.
I love it.
And so food sort of became my solace and became a way of me expressing myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it became, over time, an intellectual endeavor, even though I didn't fully commit to it as a career until after I finished college and got a graduate degree and threw that all away to become a slave in the restaurant business.
What was your graduate degree in? Too painful to bring up.
No. It's actually pretty hysterical to me because I got an MBA at UCLA, the business school there, and my specialty was in arts management, which was a nonprofit business degree, which I later, after one restaurant after another of mine failed, I would refer to, well, I had this not-for-profit degree.
Really
so obviously,
this,
yes.
Yeah, way of life. Amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, I ended up, the urge to cook and to feed people was too strong to just be in the academic world or the production world. My undergraduate degree was Italian literature and film. So,
yeah.
That's so unbelievable. I think that's the sweetest, coolest thing, to have an urge to feed people and help them and be nice and like have, it's like, in some ways, like Santa or God, whatever your belief systems may
be. I believe in both and that they are one.
They are the same person.
But and if it were only actually like that.
Yeah, but there's just something, you were talking about how you used it in some ways as kind of an icebreaker of sorts and something that made it a little bit easier. You were so kind and brought us a pie, immediately making all the other guests seem like chumps.
Yeah. We had one guest bring a whiskey bottle, but
was there anything in it?
Not a little sailboat.
Wah, wah, woo.
We drink very responsibly here
yes,
on Simpsons
we do.
Pod.
We all, yes. Hi, Mom.
Always hydrate, everybody. Get yep. some water. But we talk about how The Simpsons, for so many of us, is something that makes it easier for us to make friends. And I think that we're constantly always trying to find the little things that are going to make it easier to connect. Mm-hmm. And it is funny that, of course, the character who is social has the largest connection to food. I bet that's not a surprise at all, because mm-hmm. there is something so communal. I mean, of course,
right,
the
right,
dinner
right.
table. Like, and it is, I think we'll have to go through, either on Twitter or maybe on different conversation, just all the best food moments of The Simpsons, because like you said, there are many. But do you have a favorite outside of this one that comes to mind?
The eggs have always fascinated me. The eggs at Moe's.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which are
it's like
featured
a runner.
Prominently in this episode.
Yeah, they are in a fantastic way. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like they're a separate character.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Oh, man. I would love to see a supercut of like how they've changed over time or in what ways that they're used, you know, throughout
yeah.
the season.
Someone and, do that.
And
it's
when
the
they're
same eggs.
And when the writers go out to a bar, do they ever eat them?
You I would mean, think that with that knowledge, they would not.
Right. Yeah.
And you were also saying how food helps paint the character a little bit better. And you could see that most obviously in Lisa the Vegetarian, mm-hmm. who food is, it becomes a moral platform for her, and it becomes political, which we've also decided we shan't talk too much about
right.
Politics. Mm-hmm. Food can help you. Like, that's a funny thing, too, is like Thanksgiving is food centric and politics centric. They're fighting.
Right,
like,
right.
almost shouldn't exist together. But like the fact that we even know what the president eats and how we judge him for that. Like, it's something that if you chose to have a whole podcast about, I think people would lose their minds.
Yeah.
Just the types of food that characters eat, I think, is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's this marvelous podcast called The Sporkful.
Ooh.
Oh, I've heard of it.
That is hosted by Dan Pashman. And mm-hmm. He just did a Simpsons episode where he talked to the guys.
Oh, the writers?
Yeah, he went and talked to them about food in The Simpsons.
Wow.
I haven't listened to it yet, but I can't wait.
Man. Oh, we have to listen to that. Listeners, go check
us.
It out.
Pashman, I'm coming for you.
He scoops me constantly, but then I also I'm so admire that he comes up with these ideas.
Yeah, yeah, and it's good to have that kind of healthy creative competition because it keeps you, you know, kind of at the edge.
And just really quickly before we actually go through the episode and talk about our favorite moments and listen to some clips, I was reading and I believe it was just an interview that you gave about, you know, this episode. So I read that you were already a fan of The Simpsons going back to even in the 80s when Matt Groening had some type of art exhibit. So that is before The Simpsons and before even I think that would have been like Life of Hell era. Can you speak about that, what your experience was?
Yeah, actually, it's interesting because I ran into Matt at Jonathan Gold's the wake we had kind of after the memorial service for him, the private
mm-hmm.
one.
Yeah.
And I asked Matt, I said, do you remember that art exhibit that you did in the beauty salon above my restaurant like in 1985? And he's like, oh, yeah, definitely. And he was just coming up and he was selling art. I mean, he was selling, you know, pieces and then before we all knew it, The Simpsons was happening. And I mean, The Simpsons is just the perfect animated series. What else could you? Because it's everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's rollicking. It's rollicking fun and so political and dark mm-hmm. and hilarious. You know, it's fun because being asked to come on this show made me sort of rebond with it again.
Oh, that's yeah. great!
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We always say that, like, The Simpsons, I mean, the reason why it is the perfect TV show, I'm just going to say beyond animated, it's because it has so many different levels to it, right? So it's operating from, you know, like, the absurd levels of those cutaway jokes. It's also operating in like this very cartoony, let's send Homer to space kind of thing. But then you have that James L. Brooks heartbeat of like the daddy-daughter relationships, the sibling relationships, the family, you know, their marriage. And that always feels earned. There's so many smart people that are working on this show.
So many smart people.
And, yeah.
I mean, my other connection to the show is I got to be friends with the producer, Richard Sakai. and traveled with him in Italy and later on cooked for him often at the house during nights that the writers come to play poker.
Oh, wow.
Oh, cool.
So they have a standard poker game. Mm-hmm. And so I catered quite a few of those.
Wow.
And it was just incredible to like be a fly in the wall. They kept trying to get me to play poker, but I'm like, no, let me just serve you.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
And listen in. Yeah, so they must have eaten a fair amount of my pie before this idea happened.
Yeah, it was in the water. Well, going back to the poker games, any takeaways, any, you know...
Who cheated?
What are the top secrets that they would...
I don't think they need to cheat because, you know, a lot of them are like math heads.
Oh, right, yes. Of course. Yeah, Bill Odenkirk, who wrote this episode, I just learned, has a PhD in...
Math from like...
Inorganic biology or something.
Like from some extremely prestigious school.
Yeah, I'm mad that people can be so smart.
A little bit more about this pie before we go into the episode. Why did you choose this particular apple pie recipe?
They asked me for an apple pie, and I was immediately concerned by the length of pie recipes because you have the dough, and which ingredients, and then you have the directions, and then you have the filling, and then you have to bring it all together. So pie recipes tend to be really long. Mm-hmm. So I had to ask, you know, how much do I dumb it down?
Right.
How much? They told me it was going to fit on a recipe card. Mm-hmm. And I knew that they were going to be drawing it. So there's some leeway there. But I chose an apple pie because the language in it has a lot of shortcuts. You don't have to explain every single thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there's a glitch in the recipe because the part up above that has the ingredients, the butter is not in there. It is in the actual text of what to do, the directions. And it's so funny because the day the show dropped and, you know, the kind of food world blew up that mm-hmm. this recipe... So everybody, you know that the butter isn't...
Right, of course.
Like you would forget to put butter in a pie.
The recipe police like you came out in full force.
That's an Easter egg. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. And then do you have anything about this apple pie in your own real world recipe that makes it special to you? Is there anything that...
The simplicity of it. I tend to not like use elderflower water or... use a ton of different kinds of spices. Mm-hmm. I kind of like to keep things really plain so that they are what they are. But watching this episode really made me want to go into Mona's mind and figure out what some of her combinations were, because later on in the episode, they're referred to.
Yeah.
But we will probably get into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's jump right in. Before we do, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Listen, we already know that you love genre movies, film craft, and female filmmakers. So, if you love all those things, then by transitive property, you love my podcast, Switchblade Sisters. Hi, I'm film critic April Wolf. Every week, I have a conversation with a different female filmmaker about their favorite genre film. Each episode covers the filmmaking process, working in the film industry, and just like... general geeking out about awesome movies. I've had such great guests like the Big Sick writer Emily Gordon.
To me, indie movies as of late have come to be a catch-all term for a movie that kind of defies genre.
Billy Madison and Half-Baked director Tamara Davis.
When a comedian comes and enters onto my set, they're just there to be funny, and we're all ready and waiting for them to be funny.
Horror industry veteran and actor Barbara Crampton.
That's where real drama lies for me. What's between you and I speaking right now? Where are we meeting? And what's the energy that we create between us?
And so many others. So check out Switchblade Sisters every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back.
What a great break.
What a great break. Now that we have your attention, we should also let you know that we have a book coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And that we have live shows coming up, so just check our Twitter.
Oh, yeah, check our Twitter. We've got a live show in Austin, Texas coming up.
It's going to be super fun. But now let's get back to the episode.
All right.
So, Julia, can you help us out for those who haven't seen the show in a while?
All right. For those that haven't seen the show in a while, we like to read the synopsis from Wikipedia ice cold. And this is the first time this has ever happened. There is none.
Oh, no.
So it just says, as of this episode, The Simpsons surpassed Gunsmoke to become the longest running scripted American primetime television series by number of episodes. This event was marked in the opening sequence by a gunfight between Maggie and Marshall Matt Dillon.
Yes.
And then it's about a lot of other things.
Got it. Well, normally the Wikipedia will explain to us either pretty poorly or even worse what the episode description is. We've kind of talked about it a little bit, but would you be able to give just a brief synopsis of what happens in this episode for our listeners that haven't seen it?
Well, what's interesting to me about this episode is it doesn't have that many plot lines.
It really doesn't.
It's pretty much all about the relationship between Homer and his dad, and his dad feeling the need to confess this terrible thing that he did. That he's on his deathbed one more time.
Yeah. Once more with feeling.
Once more with feeling. And he needs to tell Homer something. And so are we going to reveal what he says now?
Let's do it.
Yeah, we could. Yeah.
So he reveals to Homer that he took the lunchbox full of recipes that his mother had lovingly written with all of her pies, and on the other side, all these little exhortations to her little boo.
Mm-hmm.
And he threw it off a cliff along with many of her other possessions when she left because he didn't want to be reminded of her.
Oof.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting plot line because the whole family kind of, like Homer says, we've come together in anger. We're hating all together.
Right, I know.
We're hating together.
They're hating together on Grandpa. And so they go through this whole process of being really, really angry, and which, of course, makes Grandpa get up out of the deathbed and go to the cliff to look for the lunchbox.
Mm-hmm. Hearing it described, it sure is a drama. Like, it is 100% a
it's very cinematic.
Just fascinating episode. And it's amazing that they could pass Gunsmoke in a number of episodes and how long they've been on the air and still be getting to what is kind of, much like your recipe, something quite simple. Like, it's just a story about how this mother character kind of could have had a larger impact. And it's something that is truly not gimmicky. There's nothing, you know, it's not too many spices. It's just kind of this simple episode. And it's amazing that they are able to come up with something like that and still have it be meaningful. And it made me tear up. It was such a good, sweet episode. So far down the line.
I mean, for me, it was sort of shocking that there was no pie in the face.
Yeah.
The pie was not in the bar.
Yeah.
And that there was such righteous outrage on the part of the children.
Right.
That their dad could have been a different person if he had been able to interact with those recipes throughout his life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's giving me goosebumps as we speak.
And then, of course, there's the car derby.
Yes.
That doesn't relate at all to the main story.
The Simpsons love to do that at the very beginning. And so let's actually kick off from where the episode starts, which is even more left field, which, of course, we've already hinted at, which is this parody of Gunsmoke.
Which I have to say, when I was first looking at it, when the first time I watched the episode, I was like, what is this? What's happening?
Yeah, what am I watching here? I was like, I just wrote down Old West Shootout with Maggie? Question mark? Like, okay.
I was kind of thinking, like, maybe this is a nod to Who Shot Mr. Burns or
the different
things they've done, but it's still kind of an interesting...
Well, I would imagine that at the time, and not like it was so long ago, but I'm sure that there was a ton of press that kind of, like, you know, teed it up so that everyone that sat down to watch it that Sunday was like, I know what this is.
Yeah.
So it didn't seem as random, but I don't know if it'll stand the test of time.
But why,
ironically,
why Maggie?
Yeah, why Maggie? Why not Maggie?
Or, like, the Simpsons should be watching it on TV and then Maggie shoots the TV with a gun. That's too much violence. I get it.
It really makes me want to go back and watch Gunsmoke.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'll admit that I've never seen it. I've never seen Gunsmoke.
I've never seen Gunsmoke.
Did you watch it?
Of course.
Yeah.
I watched when it aired.
Well, you know, I think we should all go back and give it a shot and see if it's better than The Simpsons. Maybe it is.
That'll be the new podcast.
Everything's coming up, Gunsmoke. So this episode starts in the bar, and we get a very creepy stomach full of eggs of Homer.
Yeah.
Homer's been eating these pickled eggs, which you mentioned loving, and you really get them up close and personal. Homer's doing, he's trying to break a record himself.
He's the champion of this very bad idea, wrote
yes.
Dennis' line.
I love that line. That is something I would like to adopt
with
myself.
Yeah, me too.
There's a lot of really good jokes in this episode.
There
I mean,
are.
On top of it being this like very heart emotional episode.
There really are. So it's, you know, what feels like guys being guys, kind of forcing, not forcing, he's doing it very much on his own accord, him to eat all these eggs. He's going to win $50 if he could keep him down. And as you could tell, he's about to blow.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the eggs just come pouring out of him, hitting people in the face, being caught. And Mo is pretty crafty with what he does with them. If you'd like to walk us through what he does with these eggs and where they end up, I think it's a pretty great visual gag.
First of all, I love that the way the eggs come out of him are exactly the way they went in.
Yeah, absolutely.
There has been no digestion.
Thank goodness.
At all. Or cracking of the shells, nothing. They're just perfect.
Yes.
And as they come shooting out of his mouth, Mo is like catching them in a little vessel. And then, of course, one of the guys asks, you're not going to serve those again, are you? And he's like, oh, no, I have something else in mind for them. So he puts them on the pool table, tees them up, shoots them. All of them go through all the holes. But then there's a special system underneath the pool table that collects them all and makes them automatically go into a new pool of disgusting brine. And he takes that jar that says, eaten eggs, and he puts it right back up on the bar.
That's
so awesome.
Bill Odenkirk's scientific mind. That was his thesis.
It's so funny because if you like to break things down logically, which is frowned upon by some and a lifestyle of many others, it's something where you think like, well, the amount of money it took to make that is so much less than it would cost to get more pickled eggs.
But then also Mo is very lonely, as established multiple times, and perhaps he needs a project.
Yeah, he needs to keep busy so he doesn't put his head on the oven and wish for no funeral.
Yeah.
That is Mo. So we get to a point where Homer's pretty down his luck. He ends up hitting this lamp post. And then
the mayor's favorite lamp post.
The mayor's favorite lamp post. And a man comes over and offers to help make all the problems go away.
Mm-hmm.
Can you walk us through that and where that leads?
Yeah. He offers to buy the car from Homer. And I'm not sure, I couldn't quite remember if he establishes that he's going to use it in a demolition derby.
Not yet.
I don't think he does. It
feels random.
Yeah, very random.
Yeah,
we don't really know where this is going. And he tells Marge, and he comes in kind of shouting Marge's name and has Marge's name written on his shirt.
Yeah.
To which we learn, like, any time that he says Marge's name, it's not necessarily going to end well. And that has proven to be the case because he reveals that he sold the car. And Marge very much kind of just, like, takes the bullet and is just like, well, I guess I'll have to take the bus. And he's like, well, we're like rock stars in Rosa Parks.
Yeah, taking the bus.
Such an interesting way to view their marriage.
I know.
And we get this moment where the family gathers around the TV and they're told to feast your eyes on this. And we get a sad shelter commercial.
Yeah, the Sarah McLachlan dog commercial. I mean,
what can we say? We have all been changing channels and come upon that commercial.
Absolutely.
At least when we want it.
I suspect, too, that there is a lot of breathing room in this episode. So we talked about the pacing kind of being a little different, that there isn't a lot of B story, C story. And I'm thinking that they were probably short and are just like, we're going to do the whole Sarah McLachlan commercial. We're just going to let it. We're just going to have Homer shout Marge. Not to say that they didn't have, you know, enough story to generate, but also that.
So right after this, we get the what he was trying to show, and we actually have that clip. So let's take a listen to that.
Legends of Demolition Derby are coming to Springfield. So shut up and get your ass over. Here. Proceeds go to Stuttering.
Wait for it.
We've got all the Demolition Derby greats. Vince Dead Tooth McGee, James Psychiatric Disorder Porter, Meth McFarland, Mysterious Fandango, and a very drunk Billy Joel.
I'm sorry, but most of these names mean nothing to me.
Drunk Billy Joel means something to me.
I love the dig at Seth MacFarlane.
Of course.
I love Mysterious Fandango.
Same.
That's fun.
I really like that. So there, we weren't able to hear all the jokes. There were some visuals. One of them was a sign that said, no overt racism, and yeah. Something along the lines of proof that there's racism. And of course, there is always mm-hmm. at those types of things. And we, after this, have Grandpa and the whole family in the car driving over. Grandpa's being typical Grandpa, kind of just running his mouth a little bit too mm-hmm. much. And
about rice pudding and cinnamon.
Yeah.
So it's still food.
It's still food related.
It's still food. That's very funny. And Homer raises up a partition, which millennials will know from the Beyonce song, and others will know from real life existence.
And Pretty Woman, I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah, from being in limousines.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Where you can separate yourself from the driver.
Yeah. So that's a fun little gag that comes back later for some reason.
Yeah.
There are certain moments in recent episodes of The Simpsons where they're just having fun.
I love
you know?
It.
And this is, I think, a case of that. And I like it. It's fun.
Yeah. And who doesn't want a partition just kind of wherever? I like mm-hmm. that. It's like muting keywords on Twitter in real life. So they're at the Derby, and Homer has, he could not be more excited to watch his old car get used in such a scary, awful way. And as the Car Rock Obama is about to get into the fight, I guess fight is not the right word, but let's say battle.
Yeah. What's the face-off?
What's a battle?
What's a battle?
And
I was going to say, have you guys ever been to a Demolition Derby before?
I have not, but I would love to.
Yes?
Yes.
What was your take?
Loud. So loud.
I had way more fun than I ever thought that I would. Like, something activated inside of me.
Were you screaming, too?
You have to scream.
Yeah,
you
because that's the only way you can stand the loudness.
I know. They had a rocket car that was just, or no, it was rocket truck. And it was a lot of buildup for just a small little, like, little flame. But we all were like, yeah, rocket truck.
Yeah,
it was great.
I love that.
You just become best friends with the whole stadium of people.
What's the food situation at a Demolition Derby?
Carny food.
Yeah,
hot dogs.
Bad carny food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You got to bring your own picnic.
Oh.
But there's,
you know,
beer.
cheese sauce nachos.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. If you have a hankering for it, yeah.
So right when the cars are about to do their thing, and Homer, again, is so pumped. He's saying, like, his whole life has led to this. You start to see Grandpa having what appears to be a heart attack or a stroke. He's going numb in one of his arms. He truly must go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Homer tries to shake it off, and he does the right thing, which is honestly a relief.
Yeah, I mean, because at the beginning, his dad goes, my chest is numb. And Homer goes, numb with pride.
Right, right. There's a really great runner. My chest hurts. That's called pride.
That's called pride.
My arm is numb. That's called pride. Yeah, and then finally, he has to go to the hospital. I want to just do a quick shout out for a really funny joke. That was like a fun little like cutaway. We have fan favorite character Cletus, the slack-jawed yokel, with his like 27 kids, and he's standing in front of them, and he goes, "You know that movie Cars that you like? Well, all your favorite characters are gonna commit suicide today."
Aww.
It was very funny. I thought that was great.
I like how sad they are about it too. Like, why would you tell them that?
Yeah.
I also have to say I liked when Bart asks his dad if a brain comes flying out into the stands, could he keep it?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that was really funny.
And he suggests if you get it signed, I love the by whom? The person
exactly.
whose brain it
not
is?
Not that person.
I also want to say that Barack Obama, they say for him, the affordable health car mobile that you can't kill no matter how hard you try.
And the audience boos.
Oy, oy, oy.
So Homer not only does the right thing and goes out with him, they share a moment where the hubcap comes circling them, and Grandpa says kind of protectively, like, "Ghost, like, leave him alone. He's sad enough." Like,
yeah.
So he even understands that he's being a bit of a burden mm-hmm. in this situation, which I thought was very – both of them were being very mature in this moment, and I just thought that that was kind of smart because it yeah. makes the – it makes the split between them more impactful. So they end up in the hospital, at which point he is on his deathbed. And we talked about this at the beginning of the episode, that this is when we finally reveal that there's going to be a secret and that mm-hmm. he needs to forgive him because the idea of dying with this secret is just far too painful.
Mm-hmm.
And we, in the episode, as viewers, don't know what it is yet. We just know that it's bad, and also that Grandpa's very prolonging, like, he's not good at telling the secret. It's
right,
like, hurry
right.
up already, or you already told me that. We
yeah.
can't get to it fast enough. And you know, it seems like he is about to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have Marge come out with these balloons that say, you know, like, get well and stuff. And,
yeah.
and Dr. Hibbert comes out, and we have that clip right here.
Well, we tried everything we could. And the last thing worked.
How did you save him?
When a body is in too much pain, the brain releases a hormone to bring a merciful death. But an expensive new drug blocks that and keeps him alive.
What a glorious day! I'm gonna live! And my son has forgiven me for the worst thing I ever did.
Yes, forgiven.
Sir, you just destroyed a box of hospital cotton balls. That's $75,000.
No!
I love it.
I've been in the hospital and have seen the breakdown of costs, and they ain't lying. That is how it goes.
Yeah. The only creative license they took was $74,275.
I love that line. It's mm-hmm. very, it reminds me of Arrested Development, of the doctor who just is incapable of giving, like, clear news
mm-hmm.
And always makes you think that the opposite is true. So at this point, like, we still don't really know exactly what has happened. Only Homer knows, but it's very clear that it has really put a rift between them.
Mm-hmm.
We go back and check in on the TV and see a scene of NCIS.
Yeah. Which is my favorite sequence ever. The guns firing. Everybody has guns. Guns are firing guns. Which I think is going to be the new GIF I go to when I need a pick-me-up.
I think it's going to be just our year. It's just going to be what the state of our future.
Right. And then Abe says something like, you know, that's what makes America great. Prompt investigation of U.S. naval crimes.
So at this point, the two of them are just incapable of connecting. Like, there's just such a rift. And mm-hmm. we get them kind of fighting over who's going to go to Moe's bar. And eventually they do both end up there together. And
Homer is so pissed because he's still alive.
Yes.
I know.
Yes.
He forgave him and he's alive.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's actually so brutal because, mm-hmm. you know, when people, it is an interesting question. Like, if you are, and he mentions it later, but I want to talk about it now because it relates this idea that, you know, is it the right thing to tell someone something that heavy right before you go, knowing that you don't actually have to be there to deal with the aftermath?
Like,
it's truly a interesting question. And that has to do with honesty and guilt in general. A lot of times people will tell you a thing that they did or a secret to make them feel better, but it actually makes the other person feel way worse. So
mm-hmm.
it's a really interesting, it's an interesting debate. I can't say life lesson because I think it's different for everybody and their own preferences, but it's very interesting and it does not look very good between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have the two of them at the bar sitting on opposite sides, and we have that clip here too.
I hate seeing a father and a son sit at opposite ends of the bar. Because it means I gotta walk more. Now come on, you guys. Bury the old hatchet.
Yeah.
Hey, life is short. You could be killed by a drunk driver, die of cirrhosis, stabbed in a bar fight. All kinds of random bad things happen to my customers. Now look, here's 50 cents, huh? Play the jukebox and the love tester.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road.
You heard Ray Charles.
Actually, in my jukebox, we can't afford no Ray Charles. It's a white guy named Charles Ray. Excellent vision. Excellent vision.
I love the second excellent vision.
Yeah. I felt like that was improvised in the booth.
Oh, definitely. And the love tester machine says dead to me. Ouch.
Yeah.
That's a brutal, mean thing to have come up when you're trying to figure out how sexy you are. Yeah, it's very clearly weighing on both of them. And basically the family is trying to figure out a way to kind of make it right, at least at this point, you know?
And so we get a very 2018 thing of them going to an escape room.
Have you guys been to an escape room?
No.
No.
I don't think I ever will.
Yeah.
But it was so funny. There was that remark about going to that they're going to this escape room game place, the place where dead moths go to die.
Right. Yeah. That's what it feels like to me. I can see the appeal of it, but it's A, so expensive. What is like $70 per person every time you go or something?
I don't think that's like the average.
Yeah, I'm telling the truth.
Oh my goodness.
And then I don't know. I don't like that kind of like competition and then time crunch. Like I would be terrible on The Amazing Race. I would just be like, can't we just enjoy this sunset? Why are we running? You know?
I'd get too pissy. That's me at my worst, is me on a deadline.
Oh, like, yeah.
And being trapped.
Yeah.
Trapped in a room and you can't get out till they let you out.
I also don't like people pulling pranks on me. And it just feels like a prank place.
And there's a very big, awful, lethal prank that Abe pulls on Homer.
Right.
When they go into this dungeon room where they, you know, immediately put like the dungeon helmet, I guess. I can't think of the right word for that, to cover up his mouth. Abe tells Homer in a very convincing tone, like, hey, if you put that sword in that little area over there, it might unlock a secret, like, bookcase or something.
The little, plug outlet.
And he electrocutes himself. He could have killed his son. I don't think that would make him feel very good at all. But as we've learned, he's a pretty vengeful dude at times.
Yeah.
The fact that he went to such great lengths to do this to these recipes, but we don't know that yet, but it's kind of, he had some anger. He had some old school anger.
I like the moment that we cut to Marge and Lisa outside watching them, just like, oh, come on, they're just sitting there. And then Marge says, I bet they'd hurry if they knew we had balloons.
and the balloons are so specific.
I know. I just love Marge-isms whenever they come. I just love her, like, simple way of looking at life and being upbeat.
Absolutely. And we have this little moment where we know that Lisa hates conflict and is given the advice to leave her body, at which point Bart slaps her. Is that correct?
That's the brother thing to do.
Yeah, he decides to take advantage of her not being in the body so he could abuse it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting... I wonder if that is how that works in terms of consent.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
We should say she immediately goes right back into her body and pushes him to the ground.
Yeah. So it's girl power. Even.
Yes,
it is girl power.
So then we get a little flashback to a little bit more of their relationship. There have been many flashbacks of Homer as a kid and Abe being rather neglectful. He, for the most part, has not really been there. And Homer has kind of been an oaf at times, you know, like during the moon landing, like he couldn't really be bothered. He was a little busy. But there is clearly a lot of love there. But it's a very tension-filled relationship. And in this, we see and learn a little bit more backstory, too, because we really learn a lot about these characters, that he works at a model airplane company and that building model airplanes is the only hobby that could get his mind off work, which I think is such a good joke.
Yeah, it's so fun.
And we see Homer just torturing him with his ADD.
Mm-hmm. Licking the decals. And I love the way they animated the decals. It felt very real and how they were just kind of everywhere. And I love also how they illustrate, I mean, I don't love it because it's mean to one of our central characters, but I feel like it is a very realistic take of the generational divide between Abe and Homer and how they parent and how Abe is just like standoffish in a way that felt socially acceptable of his time and like, you know, children should be seen and not heard kind of way.
And he basically like hands him off to his mom, take this monster out of here.
Mm-hmm. It's actually also interesting that you said ADD because so often I think before we ever looked at, used that lens to look at children and adults, it was kind of like we were blaming kids for their personality in a way that was very purposeful. This idea that Homer would be doing all these things just to be difficult, when it's like, you have no idea. Like, it's very likely he couldn't help it. Like, he, and also, he's a child. And so it makes it that much sweeter when he and Mona have this moment where she's, you know, making these pies and it's these really special things. And there's a little pie song, which is so adorable that we have to listen to it. It's so cute.
Can it be that it was all so tasty then? Was her rhubarb so sublime? If we had the chance to bake it all again, tell me, would we? Could we love you? She loved me. And for each pie she made, she wrote down the recipe and put a special note to me on the back.
We don't know what life will bring. So on your birthday, or any day you need it, you'll know that your mother loved you and have reasons to love yourself.
You just taught me food is love. I like myself. That lunchbox was the most valuable possession I ever had. When she left, those recipes were all I had left of her.
And that's the end. What a sweet story. And there's some things that shouldn't be gone into until a man is dead and can't be kicked.
Oh, my gosh.
It's so sad. We're all kind of crying.
It's just so straight. I mean, it's just told just straight on.
I know.
It's
really sad. It's so sweet. Yeah, and the style of the song is, you know, very, like, classic, I don't even know, like, composer.
There's a musical element to it.
Yeah, like Rodgers and Hammerstein, kind of.
It really is so special to have Homer, as you said, approach it straight on and with so much sincerity. There's no masking it. There's no downplaying it. Mm-hmm. He just is so sad to learn that this thing that was so special is not there, and that he could have read them. And as as we have Bart and Lisa and Marge all take, you know, his side, you never know what person he could have been. And it's hard because Homer, for all of his faults, is a very good person. Like, he's very sweet and loving, and he loves his kids, even if sometimes he only remembers there are two of them.
Yeah.
He, at the very least, is better than his dad was, and that's kind of all you can try to do. So often, my mom will say of her dad, well, he was the first person to stop a cycle of much worse behavior. And it's always like you just try and pass it down and down and down, which makes you know that Lisa and Bart, should they ever have kids, will be much better parents even than Homer was. But it's just such a sweet thing. And it's that line you already touched on of, like, you know, I like myself. Having confidence, that's such a huge part of life. And, and, you know, finding it as an adult is just as important. But it is so, you know, it's sad to think about a sweet little Homer then getting kind of knocked around and bullied. And they just capture it so well in this. It's amazing that in such a short little song, they were able to tell you what an important story this was.
Right. It breaks my heart. It just breaks my heart.
And also, in my own mind, I always thought that Doe was Doe.
And did you?
But we get confirmation.
Yeah.
It's canon now.
We get confirmation.
So sweet.
I love that.
Well, we've talked about a lot in this episode of, like,
I'm freaking out.
There's, you know, such an easy compulsion to make a joke, especially in a comedy program. So I feel like it is kind of a risky move to tell it so straight. And I'm really happy that they did, you know, because we're all emotional in the studio right now just thinking about it. It's a cartoon that's made us feel things.
Well, I mean, we have this relationship, this 30-year relationship with this man.
I know.
And to finally get that story. And what really struck me about it, too, was the way Mona is portrayed. There's no craziness to her.
Right. Yeah, she's just like this sort of sweet guardian angel to him in this moment. And, you know, Abe thinks that he's just sort of like unloading, you know, like, here, take, and not even paying attention to what she's doing. And she's making these incredible memories for their son. And, you know, to go back a little bit to our conversation about different parenting styles, there is kind of like a part of Homer being such a doof and being such an idiot that allows him, I think, to be a more empathetic parent in a way that that could be seen as his superpower, which I find to be really interesting. You know, maybe if he were like more intelligent and or a different person or this or that, like he would be a different kind of parent and he would be maybe more like Abe. But I kind of love that he like is not cunning enough to be anything but himself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So before we go through the end of this episode, which is so interesting and such a great way of doing it, let's take another break real fast.
Mm-hmm. Is there a dog in a car at a bar on the street?
Yay! I'm Allegra Ringo, a small dog owner. My dog Pistachio howls when she's excited.
And I'm Renee Culvert, a big dog owner. My dog Tugboat tips over when he's sleepy.
And we co-host a podcast called Can I Pet Your Dog that airs every Tuesday. We bring you all things dog.
Yes, dog news, dog tech, dogs we met this week. We also have pretty famous guests on, but Legs, we're not going to let them talk about their projects.
No.
Just want to hear about those dogs.
We don't want to hear about your stuff, only your dogs. So join us every Tuesday on Max Fun.
And we're back. What a good break.
What a great break.
Short and sweet.
Short and sweet.
Much like this episode. So at this point, the whole family is absolutely opposed to Grandpa. You even get some other things about his life that are kind of reaching the surface. The family's all muttering under their breaths about what they don't like about it. And as you mentioned, it's bringing them together. Homer has this level of like, we're hating together, and even has this zenness about it. And while I don't know that that's necessarily the message that Max Fun likes to put to its listeners, it's at least sweet in the Simpsons household for a little moment.
And we know that it's more of a device, you know, to get them to the next part of this story. So it's not promoting hate, but it's, you know, it logically, like, of course, the rest of the Simpsons family would defend Homer because he's
They're
been so
on
wronged.
The same side,
yeah. Which is truly
so
rare. So the word that Lisa uses, Lisa says, I don't normally use this word, but I'm just going to say it.
Coot.
What is that?
An old coot.
So it's not even, because it kind of sounds like a very bad word.
No, it's like what you call like an old guy that just you have no respect for.
I guess I haven't heard it without the word old in front of it. So that might be what it is.
Yeah.
It's funny that Lisa uses that. And it's like, even when she's the most irate, she can't really say anything like too outside of character.
Yeah.
I think that's really sweet.
It's like old biddy.
Maybe. Oh, I would be mad if someone called me that.
Yeah.
So Homer sings his song of hate. And we then go to, they all decide that they're going to yell at him together at the home. And so they're all walking in. They're all kind of, you know, blowing off some steam. I like that Bart is saying, like, oh, he was always calling me buddy. You know, just finding things to be mad about. Lisa reminds him that, you know, he's hard of hearing, so they have to yell the things. And they finally go in there, and they realize that he hasn't touched his lunch or his lunch pills.
Which, in a very fun dispenser.
Really hilarious dispenser.
It's like a cereal dispenser, but for pills. I want that.
Absolutely. And then we get, we notice that there's a letter from Grandpa, and it starts, you know, to my loving family, which Marge scoffs at. And we get this letter that says, you know, that he made a mistake, and it is something that he shouldn't have done, and that he regrets that he, you know, kind of revealed this burden, because it doesn't change the past. It only makes people feel worse. And maybe he should have just kept his mouth shut. And that is kind of that debate. And I don't know that you could say that it's absolutely yes or absolutely no. I think it really does depend on the person. But I kind of agree with it here. And I like that he's choosing actions instead of words. And he's actually going to go and try and track these recipes down, which in his old age is very scary and could lead to his death. So it's quite the gesture. And we have the family go back to that cliff, which is, I assume that area is also called Timberlog, but that might have just been what the diner's called. But they go to Springfield Mountain. You know, they're terrified that he is going to be dead, right?
Right,
like,
right.
It's like really serious. If you want to walk us through kind of what happens in this mountain scene, please do.
Yeah. So they go to the mountain and they see that, you know, that there's some rope tied to one of the rocks, and they see that Abe is down there. And so Homer decides to tie rope around himself and then go and scale down the mountain. And then there's like a fun bit of like, what did you tie your rope to? Because he goes to meet Abe down there, and they realize that they've kind of fucked it up and are kind of tied together. And so,
In many ways.
So now they're kind of precariously dangling off this cliff. And we see, Homer sees the lunchbox that's somehow untouched by time in some ways. Just hanging out there. Not unrealistic at all. So, Abe kind of makes the hero move and decides to help Homer. And
that made me cry. I got really emotional that Abe was willing to cut himself free.
Sacrifice himself, actually.
He really was. He was going to risk his life for Homer. And, like, that's what a really good parent would do. And it's kind of, like, really special to see him do that, because he hasn't been that parent to Homer before. And we get that really sweet moment. If you want to walk us through, because it's so emotional.
And when he cuts himself free on the rope, he starts to fall. And, of course, he lands on the bed that he had pushed off the cliff when he threw away all of her possessions. And he picks up a pillow and he puts his face into it, and he says, I can still smell her.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's really...
I know.
And then, of course, a skunk comes out of the pillow, but that doesn't soften the moment.
Exactly. That doesn't. That's where those jokes have been.
right before he actually makes the cut, there's a really sweet moment where Homer, you know, pleads with him not to do it and says, you know, like, Mom left. At least you were there, you know, like... And that's, you know, that really is something. It really is something.
Yeah, it's like they're really having some sort of fundamental coming together over all of this stuff that's been churned up in their relationship.
Mm-hmm. All because of your pie recipe.
yes!
Well, it's all because
mine
of
and
you.
Many others. So, Homer, of course, retrieves the lunchbox.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And eagerly opens it up to discover that it's empty.
Ugh. Mm-hmm. Heartbreaking. And I could have never guessed that this is where the episode was going to go.
Right.
And it is such a cool, great ending. And the family goes into the Timberlog Diner. And let's hear this clip right here.
It tastes exactly like my mom used to make. Exactly. Excuse me. How the hell did you get this recipe?
It was a miracle, actually. 33 years ago. This place wasn't doing well, possibly due to our location under a cliff. I went out to contemplate my fate, when suddenly, like a gift from God, the recipes came. I'd never seen such recipes, such brilliant fruit combinations, and such beautiful messages on the back.
Those messages were for me.
Well, then you should have them.
Everything tied up in a bow.
I love that, like, meta commentary. I love it when they, like, poke fun at themselves for... Oh, because they always do that. My favorite, I think, is if you've seen that episode, Das Boos, when they... The Lord of the Flies episode. And they just wrap it up by, like, James Earl Jones going, and then the kids got off the island by Mo. Let's say Mo. You know, I like it when they poke fun of themselves.
Same here, but also it was just so cute because in addition to doing that, Lisa had even said, you know, like, well, real life, you don't have that stuff happen. So for it to happen makes it even cuter. But I really love this woman character as well.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I love her saying just like, it could have been because we're placed under a cliff that people don't go here. But it's such a special place and it really makes the whole episode have like such a movie vibe. Like it's just such a, it feels like a very special episode.
Yeah, and the way that they animate all of the recipes falling down, it feels like something, some movie reference maybe I'm missing.
And you're seeing all the messages, all the messages to him as they flutter down.
Yeah, it's great. Everything about this episode feels like it's got a little extra oomph to it in that, and that heart kind of coming through. So thanks for, you know, picking this episode and contributing to this episode and, you know, guiding us through it. It's been really great.
And I want to thank James Brooks.
Yeah.
who apparently was the one who wanted to make contact with me
and
include the recipe.
That is the coolest thing in the world.
He seems like a really nice guy.
I'm going to ask him to participate in our pie contest next year.
Oh, that's so great. I love that so much. So you talked a little bit about how of all the characters, you know, that there is at least some connection to Homer. But would you say that there are any other characters that you connect to the most on the show that you identify as?
Well, I think the brilliance of The Simpsons is like you connect with all of them because they each are part of a human personality. When I was in the restaurant business, I really connected to Mo.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah,
on grumpy days. Mm-hmm. You just really wish you could just be like Mo and like let it all hang out.
Mm-hmm.
I loved him.
That's funny, though, that it could change with like your life chapters.
Yeah.
I think that's right, you know, because we're ever evolving.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I also think that I do have a tendency to be super nerdy and super like reading oriented, so there is a part of me that's very Lisa, I think.
Uh-huh.
All the best of us have some Lisa in us.
Yeah.
Whether we want to or not, we all
Allie
have some
Lisa.
Allie
always says she's got a little bit more Bart in her, though.
I've got some rebellious Bart, but I'm a lot of a Lisa, too. It's multifaceted, mm-hmm. but... Do you also have a favorite episode that comes to mind outside of this one? It'd be impossible to top this.
I love the one where Marge becomes a food critic, or she starts a blog.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I sense a theme.
Yeah.
It's so funny. She's so fearful, and they go to the Ethiopian restaurant, and just through just dumb luck, she becomes known for being an adventurous eater. And, of course, it's kind of all set up by the culture that was created by my friend Jonathan. Mm-hmm. So
amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. There's also obviously the Marge's pretzel business.
Oh, that's right.
Pretzel
wagon. The
Quite
twisted world of Marge Simpson. Yeah.
See, all this has done is made me want to go through, find some wiki about food in The Simpsons, and then just go power through them all.
There's a really great Simpsons-themed food blog called Eats Like a Duck.
Yes.
Yeah, that they have a lot of recipes, and they'll like sort of categorize them in different categories of like easy, medium, hard. But then I think they also do, there's one category I like called I'm not gonna make that, and it's like a bunch of stuff that's just ludicrous, you know, nuts and gum together at last.
Oh, I love it.
On one of those, but I have made that. It's not really making anything.
We've all made that.
You just mix nuts and gum.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. This has been such a delight. We're about to eat this pie that you made us, and listeners, imagine you're doing the same, or or follow the recipe, but remember to add butter, because it is in the notes. It's just not written.
Yeah.
But thank you so much. Where can people find anything that you'd like to plug? Any books or any social media?
I'm on Instagram a lot.
Awesome.
At KCRW Evan. And I am very active on Twitter, Evan Kleiman. And KCRW, KCRW.com/goodfood.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. And Julia, where can people find you?
Thanks so much for asking. I'm at Julia Prescott and all the things. Allie, where can people find you?
Thank you so much for asking. You can find me at Allie Gerson and all the things. You can find us at Simpsons Pod.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's coming up. Simpsons is a production of Maximum Fun. Our show is engineered and edited by Jesus Ambrosio, and our senior producer is Laura Swisher.
Swish.
Smell you later.
Smell you later.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.